Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah!
Welcome to another edition of Drive Time Sports. KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Muscarini, alongside Travis Anderson. And as we get rolling on what's going to be a very busy Tuesday edition of the show, Travis, tonight we have Game 1 of the Eastern Conference Semis between Cleveland and Toronto, Game 2 for New Orleans and Golden State. I'm going to dive right into it and just ask you, were you surprised by what Boston did last night?
A little bit. They went out. Philadelphia couldn't make a three. Kerry Rozier continues to play at a high level. So, yeah, a little bit shocked at Boston. That game wasn't as close as the score indicated.
No, Rozier was great. 29 points in that contest. Embiid scores 31 in a losing effort for the 76ers. But tonight, Cleveland, Toronto, New Orleans, Golden State, your thoughts. How do you see these two games shaking out?
I think Toronto looks like more like that Houston-Utah game one, where that quick turnaround for the Cavs. Seems like it has blowout written all over it in Toronto's favor. And Steph Curry comes back for the Warriors. Pelicans just don't have enough to compete with the Warriors. And the Warriors are going to advance, and they're probably going to get back to the finals.
They are going to sweep New Orleans.
Yeah,
I don't think the Pelicans get one.
Yeah, I'll give them one, if that.
I'm with you. I just don't see this really being that much of a series. That's what's in store in the NBA tonight. Now, speaking of the NBA, on the show today, we're going to be joined by Ian Thompson. May be a familiar name for you. He is the author of the book, The Soul of Basketball. Ian has spent some time really covering the NBA all over the world, more notably with Sports Illustrated. His new book, fantastic. I've almost finished the read. I'm not quite to the end of it yet. He's going to join us to talk about his book. It features... Well, I guess you could say the book itself is centered around today's era. Kobe, Dirk, LeBron, Doc and the Celtics. Fun era of the NBA. I'm looking forward to this interview.
A lot of good information in there. It's a great book, so get out if you haven't and get it. If you're an NBA fan, you'd really enjoy it.
Yeah, you definitely will. So we're going to talk to him a little bit later on in the show. And then on the local sports front, next segment, we're going to be joined by Emory soccer coach Troy Winter. So we have a lot to dive into. We're going to send it back to the studio for just a moment. Again, when we return, Coach Troy Winter will join us here on this Tuesday edition of Drive Time Sports.
What you listening to?
Big Sports Radio Guy.
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss things.
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
We are back on Drive Time Sports. Let's talk some soccer. State tournament is set and Emory High School Region 15 champions. Needed some help last week, but they got the job done. And joining us right now to talk about that and the upcoming schedule, we have Coach Troy Winter over the phone right now. Coach, a pleasure to get you back on today. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Jordan.
Coach, we'll dive right into it. Boy, an exciting way to close out the year. You guys needed some help in order to clinch a region championship. You managed to take care of business at home against Richfield. At the same time, you got some help and Manti fell short. And with that being said, you guys are region champs.
Yeah, it's an extremely exciting thing. You know, the boys have worked really, really hard this year, and that was our goal going into the season, was a region championship, and moving on into the state finals, and so we're there. We've achieved one goal and got a couple more here to achieve after this.
How difficult was it to keep the boys focused on just taking care of business against Ridgefield? Because if you don't win that game, it doesn't matter what happens in the Manti or Stampede game.
Absolutely. And it being senior night and a lot of emotion as far as that goes as well, too. You know, they knew the importance of the game, and so we just went out and we just played. I really felt like we played really good soccer, and keeping them focused was hard, but we took care of business. You know, they come out with the victory, and it was really good. So
in the lead up to the regular season finale, Coach, you guys did have a setback, and it had been so long since this team had actually suffered a loss. I think the last time you and I had talked, we talked about this, I guess we call it a winning streak, this massive winning streak that you guys were on, to suffer a setback against Manti and have the boys bounce back. I mean, not to have that game be deflating at all. I mean, I think that speaks to the character of this team.
You know, I absolutely. You know, and one of the things that's, you know, hard to see on a stat sheet, you know, unfortunately with the Manti game is we really went over and we played really good soccer. We had the ball that just didn't bounce our way. You know, the ball of good luck, unfortunately. But we played really well. And for them to show the character coming back against Richfield and playing really well again there shows the character of this team. Absolutely, you know, it's a great team to be part of, and these guys have worked really, really hard this year.
On senior night, for Taven Cook to pitch a shutout, I mean, that right there is something in itself. You get a couple of goals from Spencer Hadfield as well. All in all, when you go back and you look at the way the team played on senior night, Coach, what was your overall assessment?
You know, I think the ball distribution and our control of the tempo of the game, I really feel like we're peaking at the right time. Our soccer players have continued to get better. Our ball movement's getting better. Just everything just seems to be falling into place just a little bit better. And at the end of the season, that's exactly where I like to see it is, you know, as we're getting better as we're going into the playoffs, because obviously we know the playoffs are, you know, a new season, basically.
Region 15 has three teams with 7 wins. You and North St. Pete finish with ties. North St. Pete never beats Emory. That's why Emory becomes region champions. Boy, you want to talk about a competitive division. I mean, three teams with 7 wins, that's unheard of.
Correct. And it's, you know, it's been very competitive this year, for sure. You know, there's some good soccer teams, you know, in this division, and you know, it's anybody's game at any, you know, any given week, you know, even, you know, as far as Richfield, you know, and Grand as well too, you know, they pitched this all fits, all three of them top 7 teams, you know, them 7 teams, you know, so you know, it's a very competitive division, very competitive.
As the season comes to an end, and now you have a chance to kind of look at Region 14 and 13, is 15 the best front-to-back, in your opinion?
You know, Region 15's good. You know, each one of the divisions, they have unique players and unique teams in each one of them. You know, I'll go out on a limb and say, you know, we're just as competitive as the other teams. You know, there's going to be sleepers. There's always an upset. You know, those kind of things as well, too. Region, you know, 14 and Region 13, they have some good soccer squads as well, too, and we'll have to bring our A game, you know, throughout the playoffs here.
Again, we're being joined right now by Coach Troy Winter of the Emory High School soccer squad. Coach, let's take a look at the state championship tournament. If you had to pick between the bottom or the top half, and Emory is in the bottom half, there's no other number one seed in that section of the bracket. Is that kind of where you wanted to be?
You know, I kind of preferred that, and it worked out really good. I prefer to kind of be where we are and stuff. You know, we draw, you know, I don't want to say, you know, a harder, easier, you know, road, but, you know, being in the bottom here, you know, kind of helps us out, you know, possibly if we show up and we play the games correctly and all our cards fall the way they do. It's very optimistic for us.
Top half of the bracket, Manti is a 3 seed. Macer Prep's a 4. Boy, that's not a traditional 3 seed in Manti. And looking ahead, I mean, Judge Memorial will more than likely get Manti in the second round. And it's almost as if you have 2 1 seeds going get it right there. That's kind of the way I view this. You know, you have Delta and Judge Memorial in the top half, but you have North St. Pete and Manti, who had 7 wins as well. It's almost like 4 1 seeds are in the top half.
Right, correct. There's a lot of good teams in that top half, that's for sure.
Coach, Union, this is who's up first. We'll get Union this weekend. It's a very exciting game. It's the second time that you guys have played Union. The first time it was a close affair. I believe it was in St. George, correct?
Correct.
What do you know about Union?
You know, they're similar to us. They got a little bit of similar style. They've got some good ball control, kids that play year-round soccer. They've got a fight and a zest for the game as well, too. And they're coming out to look up to upset us, you know, and stuff. There's always an upset in the state playoffs, and they're looking for that. They're a team that we can't underestimate by any means. I think we match up well, And I think we can go out and we, if we show up and we play the game of soccer the way it's meant to be played here at Emory High, then we should be able to take care of business. But we can't give them an opportunity, or they'll take advantage of us for sure.
Are you surprised that Union only scored 9 goals in region play?
I am, because they have some offensive threats that I think showed up a little bit later in the season. They've worked out some kinks as well too. So I was really surprised to see that they had only scored that many goals, because they have a couple of offensive threats that are really good as well too.
We don't want to look too far ahead, Coach, but also joining Emory in the bottom half of the bracket, ALA, Summit Academy, Carbon, Richfield, Morgan, and Grand. ALA and Summit Academy, second round matchup, if you guys are to get past Union, it's a pretty difficult contest there in itself.
Absolutely, absolutely. Both them teams, we've met both of them teams over the last, 4 years here, ALA a couple times, Summit Academy last year. They are very good soccer teams as well, too. And we're going to have to bring our A game, moving forward, if that's the case. Either draw will be a very competitive game and be a very good game.
Home field advantage on Thursday against Union, how important is that?
It's huge. We play way better at home, and having home field advantage is always the benefit. That's why, being a region champion, having that number one seed is such a coveted position, because then, it's yours to take care of business.
Coach, with that being said, between now and Thursday, what are some of the things that you try to fine-tune in practice?
We're working on our ball control right now. We're just working on touches. We're making sure that, that our players get out and they get the touches they need. Also being loose, as far as, breaking up the mundaneness of our practices. We take an untraditional, approach and make sure we have fun and understand that soccer is a game of fun and enjoyment and just touches on the ball, and we'll do some conditioning and just be ready to play on Thursday night.
You guys play such a large amount of games in such a short period of time, Coach. How are you on the injury front?
We are really in really, really good shape, to be honest with you. That's something that I am so very fortunate of, and we, this team has been blessed with, is they take their conditioning and their preparation and everything, all of them take it really serious as far as making sure that they're in condition, and they don't put themselves in harm's way. We've had one little, minor injury, here a week ago and stuff that hasn't really held us back. It showed a little bit of an effect on the Richfield game and stuff. But other than that, going into Thursday, we'll have all our players will be 100%.
What's the biggest difference that a spectator will see in the level of play between a regular season soccer game and a playoff game?
It's going to be total excitement all the way through. Sometimes during a regular season game, we set stagnant, or we get overconfident, or we just kind of set and just be a little bit lackadaisical. A playoff game, it is, in my opinion, is high intensity, the whole time, because it's extremely crucial. It's a win or go home, and it's an unfortunate thing, but if you don't win, you go home and your season's done. And so the urgency there is always paramount in the playoffs.
I asked you, Coach, at the beginning of the year during our first interview, if a region championship was something, or if a state championship, was something that was realistic, and you said absolutely. But the first goal was to win a region championship. Have things played out the way you expected at the beginning of the year?
They have. Our team, has played really, really well. We've dropped a couple games to people. We dropped one game to, the Grand that I didn't expect. Our game against Manti there, I didn't expect that, the way to drop the way we did. But as far as our overall play and our win streak through the middle, that was an extremely exciting thing. The boys, gained a lot of confidence. We took a loss for Manti, and then we come back in on senior night and played really well. We're headed in the right direction, and the thing that's most optimistic for me is we're actually peaking at the right time. We're playing our best soccer now, and we're playing really good soccer right now, and moving on, that should be to our advantage.
Well, Coach, it's fun to get you on and get an update on how the team is doing. Best of luck as you take on Union Thursday, and hopefully next week we're talking about going on to the second round.
absolutely, I love it, and I appreciate all your support and all the fans out there. Come and join us Thursday night at 7 o'clock. We'll be under the lights, and it'll be a very exciting game.
And if you guys win on Thursday, you'll play again Saturday, again at home, correct?
Correct, yes, sir. Yep.
All right, Coach. Well, again, best of luck, and we'll talk again soon.
Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate it, Jordan.
Again, that's Coach Troy Winter of the Emory High School soccer team. We've got a break for just a moment. We do have more Drive Time Sports coming up. When we return, we're going to talk to Ian Thompson. He's a critically acclaimed author. You probably recognize the name from Sports Illustrated. He has written a new book about the NBA, and since we are right in the middle of the playoffs, that'd be a perfect time to bring Ian in on the show. We'll talk to him about his new book when we return here on Drive Time Sports.
This is Derek Favors, number 15 from the Utah Jazz. You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
3-point game, Harris. Pick and roll, Favors takes it strong and one. Oh my, watch Derek Favors take a leap right here.
Welcome back to Drive Time Sports, KOL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. Of course, we're right in the middle of the NBA playoffs. I'm extremely excited for our next guest. We are going to talk to Ian Thompson, who's the author of the book, The Soul of Basketball, The Epic Showdown Between LeBron, Kobe, Doc, and Dirk That Saved the NBA. First off, Ian, I definitely appreciate you taking out the time to join us today. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jordan. I appreciate being with you.
Definitely a fun conversation to have. And the book, again, The Soul of Basketball, it's out. It's in stores right now. And I'll tell you, it's very entertaining. You're dissecting an era of basketball. I know we talk about the golden era all the time, you know, the Magic and the Bird era of basketball. But I think this particular era is so important to the history of the game, considering it was the era following Michael Jordan. And that's why I've really enjoyed the book up to this point, Ian.
I appreciate that. Thanks. Yeah, you know, when Michael Jordan made his last shot against you-know-who in 98 and retired, the NBA was obsessed with finding a replacement for him. When Michael Jordan came into the NBA in 84, it was just a few months after David Stern had taken over as commissioner, and the NBA was just coming off a really troubled time where they weren't sure if they were going to make it. Several teams had been close to bankruptcy, and the NBA Finals weren't even being shown on live TV. You had to watch on tape delay late at night. There was all sorts of negative talk about the NBA, and Michael Jordan put the league on a financial footing where they didn't have to worry about their future anymore. He made the league financially viable. And so because he was the guy everything was built around, there was this sense, I think, from the marketing partners of the NBA, you know, the TV networks, the commercial sponsors, all of that, that the NBA needed another Michael Jordan, that was how the league had been successful before, and to keep that thing going, to keep the success going, they needed to continue that model. So the first guy they looked to be the next Michael Jordan was obviously Kobe Bryant, and he wasn't up to it. And then came LeBron James, and they looked to LeBron James from the age of 17 to be the next Michael Jordan. He was 17 years old when he was on the cover of Sports Illustrated as the chosen one. And he embraced that. He had the chosen one tattooed across his back, like the name across the uniform. And it turned out to be too much for him. When he was 25, as we all remember, he went on TV and he invented a TV show for himself, The Decision, to exploit all the interest in his free agency, and it turned the whole country against him. He became a national villain, and he ended up going to Miami really in need of learning how to win the championship, and that's what happened. He joined up with Pat Riley. He learned how to win. A lot of players around the league beat him up, taught him a lot of hard lessons. And so this book revolves around that season when the NBA could have gone either way. LeBron could have stayed the villain. He could have not learned from his mistakes. And I don't think the NBA would be so popular today if that had happened. But it went the other way. He absorbed all those hard lessons from people like Kobe Bryant and Doc Rivers and the Celtics, Dirk Nowitzki of the Mavericks, Greg Popovich. A lot of people who opened up to me and told me a lot of great stories about that season and about about who they are and their approach to basketball, and all of that, I think, has turned the NBA into what it is now.
Well, Ian, as I read this book, I think it's important for the listeners to get to know just who Ian Thompson is as well, because you've been writing in sports for well over three decades. I mean, you've had time at the Boston Globe, National Sports Daily. Of course, I recognized you from Sports Illustrated and NBA.com. You've sat courtside for the NBA Finals. If we talk about Magic and Bird, you were in Barcelona when Michael Jordan and the original Dream Team kind of pushed the brand of basketball global. So, what was it about this particular era that enthused you enough to say, you know what, I'm going to write a book about the last 15, 20 years in the NBA when you had been around so much prior to that? And what I like to consider the golden age of the NBA, I know they call it the golden age, but in my opinion, it is the golden age when we talk about Magic and Bird and Jordan. What was it about this era that that sparked that excitement, at least in your brain?
I appreciate that. You know, it's just this question of what is it all about? What is the higher calling of basketball? It's got to be about something more important than money and fame. And that was the big breakthrough for the NBA, as it was seen at the time when Michael Jordan came along and he brought all this money into the league and proved that black players can be popular in America. I mean, he got a lot done, and I think as a result, it became easy to focus on the wrong things. It became easy to focus on the money and the TV ratings and the commercial aspects of it. I worked for Europe in 6 years. I was the sports writer in Europe for the International Herald Tribune. It was the largest newspaper around the world. It went to every country. And I covered a lot. I was around a lot of European basketball. And what I came to realize is that around the rest of the world, where basketball is played, it's not viewed as a business. You know, the basketball leagues, professional leagues around the world, they do not make money. A lot of them lose a lot of money. They're propped up by rich owners who pay salaries that they can't afford to pay, but they pay it out of their own pocket, sort of to help the local community or to create pride. And so people who love basketball around the world, they love it because they see it as a theater to America. They see the American way being played out on the court symbolically. It's a melting pot to them, the NBA is. They see on every NBA team, every NBA game, people from all over the world, immigrants, Americans, all colors, all cultures, all religions, all shapes and sizes, all having to get along. That's how people around the world view the NBA. That's how Dirk Nowitzki viewed it when he came here. And in our country, I think we sort of take all the great things for granted, like we do, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Take
sure.
voting for granted. We take our democracy for granted. And we take the symbolism of the NBA for granted. We tend to look at it more as a business and a money-making enterprise and a competition for TV ratings, when really, if you really think about it, the fans aren't watching the games for any of that. The fans are watching the games because they want to be inspired. And that's particularly the case with the Utah Jazz. They have one of the great fan bases in the world, and it's one of the hardest places to play, because people are really into the game. Deep in their hearts, they know that they're seeing something that's more valuable than the money it generates. And that's why I was really trying to get across with this story. So LeBron James is this talented young guy, and he goes on TV for commercial reasons. He does the decision for commercial reasons, and it leads him astray. It turns him into something he isn't. He wants to be a champion, but he's been sort of waylaid by all the commercial forces of the NBA. And then he finds his heart. He gets his head on straight. He goes back the right way. He recovers from his mistakes, goes to Cleveland, wins a championship, atones for everything he did wrong. And I think it's a great story about how the NBA is sort of a self-correcting society that goes off the tracks every now and then and finds its way back to its ideals.
I got a couple of questions I want to ask you about sections of the book, and if we can dissect that a little bit, if that's okay.
Oh, please, please.
I'd be lying to the listeners if I told them that I have enjoyed the NBA as much as I did when Kobe Bryant played. I'd be lying if I said that. I still love the NBA. To me, it's my favorite professional sport in general, but I would be lying if I said I enjoyed it as much now that Kobe's days are gone. And I want to go back to something that you said last segment. Sometimes we take things for granted in this country. And I think even being a huge Kobe Bryant fan, at times I took for granted that Kobe would always be there. One of the things I like about your book is that for some reason, Kobe never seemed to be able to live up to the billing. I think he lived up to the billing. I guess what I'm trying to say is it seemed like Kobe was in a no-win situation for the majority of his career, be it coming out of high school, the trade from Charlotte to L.A., the situation with Shaq, winning two championships without Shaq, the controversy that surrounded when he demanded a trade. I mean, whatever it was, it seemed like Kobe was always in a no-win situation in Los Angeles. And from your perspective in this book, you take a different view on Kobe, and I almost feel that you embrace the idea that, look, this guy was that special. And I don't think people realized what we had until he was gone.
Yeah. You know, here's a guy when he's 19 years old, he's coming off the bench for the Lakers, and he gets voted in as a starter in the All-Star game in New York City, Madison Square Garden, Michael Jordan's final All-Star game with the Bulls. And it's seen as a passing of the torch, right? He is going to be the next Jordan. But he wasn't even the best player on his own team when he was playing with Shaq. And there's all this pressure on Shaq and Kobe each to be the next Jordan. They each want to be the guy, the leading guy. And the one won't let the one won't stand aside and let the other take over. And that's why it had to break up. That was a really tough time for the NBA when individualism is more important than teamwork. You have this team that should have won a bunch of championships together. These two players should have won, kept winning for year after year after year. But they were under this pressure based on the model of Michael Jordan to be the biggest star rather than winning this team. And then Kobe, after Shaq leaves, he desperately wants to be Michael Jordan, but he can't be, because of his legal troubles and the breakup with Shaq. He's never going to be as popular off the court as Michael Jordan, but on the court, you can see, and this is in his actions, not his words, but just by how he lives his life, he is desperate to be Michael Jordan on the court, and he becomes the most competitive, ruthless guy on the court that we've seen. Even Phil Jackson wonders if Kobe maybe is more competitive than Michael Jordan was, more ruthless about it. And I referred to Kobe as the bastard. The chapter that the first chapter that deals with Kobe is called The Bastard. And I was talking to Doc Rivers, the former coach of the Celtics, about this, and he said Kobe's gonna love being known as the bastard. I mean, he embraced that, because what he did was in this time when all these young players are coming in and being handed instant money, instant fame, the league is revolving around all these young players who really don't know who they are yet. Kobe Bryant's the one on the court saying, look, if you want to win, you have to go through me. If you want to win, you have to work as hard as I do. You have to care as much on the court as I do. Look, Kobe wants as much money as everybody else. He wants as much fame as everybody else, but you never question his priority. His priority was the game on the court. That's how he defined himself. That's what was missing from LeBron James that he has since come to find. And I really think Kobe's going to go down as one of the important players in the modern history of the game, because he bridged that era from Michael Jordan to where we are now. He forced all these young guys to keep their attention on the court, first of all.
Again, we're being joined right now by Ian Thompson, who is the author of the book, The Soul of Basketball, the epic showdown between LeBron, Kobe, Doc, and Dirk that saved the NBA. Ian, I want to dissect certain sections of this book, but we got a break for a quick commercial. Do you have time to hang around for one more segment?
Oh, gladly. Thank you.
Great. More coming up with Ian Thompson when we return here on Tribe Time Sports.
With the sixth pick in the 2014 NBA Draft, the Boston Celtics select Marcus Smart from Oklahoma State University.
This is Marcus Smart from the Boston Celtics, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
Marcus Smart, what a spin move and a finish. Hard to handle Marcus Smart, whether he's outside or inside the paint.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, again being joined right now by Ian Thompson, who is the author of the book, The Soul of Basketball, the epic showdown between LeBron, Doc, Dirk, and Kobe that saved the NBA. Hey, Ian, speaking of Kobe, of course, you're always going to have that tie. Kobe and the Celtics, they went to the NBA Finals twice in a three-year span. They split 1-1. And you mentioned Doc Rivers. I think it's an excellent segue. We can talk about the Boston Dynasty. I don't know if it's still... I don't know that that Boston Dynasty was still relevant to the NBA, to the New Age fans, once the Celtics had acquired Kevin Garnett, and they went out and they acquired Ray Allen, and they put together the Big Three. But it made for some very interesting basketball. And in fact, when you take a look at it, no, you dissect this in your book on perspective from Paul Pierce, the idea that that Celtics Big Three that won an NBA championship and dealt somewhat of an improbable road for LeBron during his first stint in Cleveland to get to the finals, that's kind of what created the shakeup in the Eastern Conference, right?
Yeah. You know, Paul Pierce was the last Celtic to have a relationship with Red Auerbach, to know him personally and to be mentored by him. And it took Paul years to become a champion, and it was a really hard road, and it finally happened. He was on the verge of asking for a trade from the Celtics, and then they traded for Ray Allen and Kevin Garnett, and they won the championship the next year. But for all three guys, it took years of learning the hard way how to win and realizing that they needed each other in order to renew that Celtic tradition that went back to Bill Russell and Red Auerbach. And then Paul Pierce is watching the rally in Miami. The day after LeBron signs with Miami, they have that rally at the arena in Miami with all the white smoke and LeBron making all these false promises, not five, not six, not seven championships. It's going to be easy to win championships now, all that kind of stuff. And Paul Pierce told me he's watching on TV and he's saying, what the hell is this? These guys don't know how hard it is. They think we're just going to lay aside just because they've come together, that it's all over with. So the Celtics were really offended by it, and they set out to teach Miami a lesson. And the whole reason why those three guys in Miami got together in the first place was because individually they had been unable to beat the Celtics in the playoffs, and so they needed to get together in order to get to the NBA Finals, to get by Boston. So it created this really old-school rivalry that we really don't see much of anymore, where the one team really just can't stand the other and is offended by them. And that's why the Celtics were so angry when Ray Allen left, because it really was something from another era, their hatred for Miami. And I think they had a lot to do with LeBron finally learning how to become a champion.
You know, I always call it I refer to it as the fraternity era in the NBA. That's where I think we're at in today's game. And you've been around the game of basketball for so long. And when I say fraternity, I mean the idea of Ray Allen leaving the Celtics and joining the Miami Heat. The idea of Kevin Durant leaving a team in which, you know, you lose a 7-game series in the Western Conference Finals and you go join the defending Western Conference champions, a team that was already built to win a championship. LeBron James leaving the Heat, going back to Cleveland, bringing, but teaming up with two other All-Stars. We don't have to dissect the way that that went down. But to me, Ian, it's almost like the fraternity era. So we have the golden era. We talk about this era that saved the NBA. And I feel it is the fraternity era. Is that a fair assessment?
I think it is, and yet there's part of the old time there too. I mean, it's definitely an era of free agency now, and Pat Riley broke it all down for me. We spent 9 hours talking about all of these things for this book, and he explained how he developed the idea of trying to recruit those three guys. He spent 2 years, everything Miami did for 2 years leading up to that summer of 2010 when LeBron was a free agent, everything they did was built on the pipe dream of trying to sign all three guys. And it was something that no one had ever tried before. Well, no one thought they could pull off. And no one was talking about Miami doing it. So that took tremendous guts by Pat Riley to believe he could do it and then to gamble everything on it, to gamble 2 years on trying to get those guys. There are a lot of relationships among the players, and they are getting together kind of to form their own teams. And yet I still see mind games. I still see old-school actions. Like, if you remember when LeBron was in Miami and they were being opposed by the Indiana Pacers every year, and LeBron tried to make it seem as if he was good friends with Paul George, and in fact, he's competing with Paul George. And mm-hmm. I think he was just playing mind games with Paul George to make Paul think, look, we should be friends instead of rivals. In the meantime, LeBron's cleaning up on him every year. And then he baited Draymond Green into throwing a punch at him by stepping over Draymond in the 2016 finals. And Draymond gets himself kicked out of the game, and that's how Cleveland was able to come back and win that series. That's another example to me of LeBron doing what he could do. Pat Riley and I talked about that, and we both kind of agreed it was like the modern day version of Kevin McHale taking out Kurt Rambis. Right? You're not allowed to do that anymore. You would get suspended for weeks if you did that now. Maybe
right?
What McHale did to Rambis, but LeBron, by today's standards, did the same kind of thing. He took them out of their game. He baited Draymond Green into making that big mistake. And he changed the series as a result. So, on the one hand, they all act like friends, but I think when they're on the court and you watch the games, you can still see a lot of the old competitive stuff. It's still there.
Ian, before I let you go, I want you to go ahead and give us a little backstory on the book. Now, if I understand this right, it was about 6 or 7 years in the making, right?
It was, yeah, and it was only supposed to take a year. But I was trying to tell this bigger story about how everybody uses basketball. Basketball for these great players and these coaches, it's a platform that sort of allows them to figure out who they are, who they want to be. It becomes their way of pursuing the American dream. And that really is the identity for basketball, you know? I always thought it was so wrong that people refer to basketball as the black sport, because basketball is colorblind and it's a melting pot thing, and it's a sport of merit. Everybody plays by the same rules, and skin color should have absolutely nothing to do with it. But basketball was too young of a sport to have its own identity yet. It had not turned the corner. You know, we all know that baseball is the game of summer, right? Mm-hmm. Americans know that, and Americans know that football is the military game, the game of war. But do we know what basketball is? Have we come up with an identity for basketball yet? And as David Stern tells me in the book, the way people have tend to look at basketball is as the black sport. And so with this sport, it took me a lot. With this book, it took me a lot longer than I would have thought to try to figure out how to tell a story that can lead us to understand basketball from a different point of view, where it's not about race, it's about something bigger, and it's not about money, it's about something more valuable than money. And in the end, when an immigrant comes to America and beats the Americans at their own game, which is what Dirk did, it helps you realize that basketball really is the sport of the American dream. It's possible for anybody anywhere to realize who they are, who they can be in basketball. And then Jordan, the other part of what took me so long was just that it's hard to tell a story that revolves around LeBron James when people don't like LeBron or don't respect him. But when he moved back to Cleveland and made everything right by winning that championship in 2016, I think then it was possible to tell a story in which LeBron is one of these characters that really is using basketball to pursue the American dream, to pursue a cause larger than himself, which is what he did for Cleveland by going back. And so it took that long, too, for the story to be something that people might be open to receiving. And I'm glad the timing's worked out the way it has. We're doing a lot of talking now about American values in this country and the role of immigration and all of that. Whichever side you're on, we're talking about it. And I think basketball is a theater to all of those discussions.
You bring up LeBron and how his story kind of had to come full circle with him going back to Cleveland. Look, I'm not a LeBron guy. I'm not. And at the end of the day, I can still appreciate the fact that while there's completion to one aspect of his story, well, we don't know what the end of this guy's story still is. And I, you know, bridging, when we talk about someone bridging the game, I can't think of anyone better, Ian, to take us into that next level and finish his story than LeBron now that Kobe's gone.
Yeah, and you know what? I appreciate that you aren't a LeBron guy. And I think for people that are still offended by LeBron, this book is probably for you, because this deals with his toughest year.
Right.
And there are a lot of hard facts about LeBron in here. There's some things that he's not going to want to hear about or read about. And it's a story of how everybody around the league sort of held him to account and forced him to learn from his mistakes. And when he won his first championship, finally, in 2012, they beat Oklahoma City, the first thing he said was, the best thing that ever happened to me was losing the previous year to Dirk Nowitzki in the NBA Finals, because it forced me to figure out that I'd made a lot of mistakes. It forced me to get better as a person, as a player, and to learn from what I'd done and to get better. And so I think in a way that makes LeBron more of a human being, mm-hmm. than we normally see in these star athletes. I think we know LeBron better than we do other players, surely than we really ever knew Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan was sort of like a superhero, and you didn't see a lot of weakness in Michael Jordan, but we've seen a lot of weakness and human frailty and mistakes in LeBron. We've seen him come in as a 17-year-old on top of the world. We've seen him fall on his face, have to get himself back up, work his way back up again. And as a result, when you know somebody that well, you know it can be a complicated relationship between fans and a player like LeBron, because you know him like he's kind of like a member of your family, like a cousin or something. You know his faults, you know his strengths, and it's a more complicated relationship. So I agree with you. The story isn't done yet. In my mind, he's one of the top three players of all time. Chronologically, it's Bill Russell, Michael Jordan, LeBron James. And where are the next few years going to take him? How long is he going to play? How many more championships is he going to win? When he's done, where is he going to rank among the greatest players? All that's yet to be decided. When he leaves, is it going to be the model of Michael Jordan, where it revolves around one player, or there going to be a bunch of great players? I think that's where it's headed now. I think that's what he's helping to create, is this thing where it's not just one guy that drives the NBA, it's all of these young players that we're seeing develop now. And I think that's a really good place for the NBA to be going.
Ian Thompson, again, he is the author of the book, The Soul of Basketball, The Epic Showdown Between LeBron, Kobe, Doc, and Dirk That Saved the NBA. I'm telling you, this is a must-read if you are a fan of the National Basketball Association. Again, Ian, as you recognize that name, he's been a sports writer for close to three decades. Again, I remember Ian from Sports Illustrated and, of course, NBA.com. Ian, let the listeners know where they can find more of your work.
Oh, thanks so much. You can go to my website, ianthompson.com, to see how to buy the book and to find out about the book and to read more about the characters. And I've started a newsletter for NBA fans around the world called NB Answers. And it's to help explain American basketball to people around the world who love the NBA but have trouble accessing it and connecting to it. So, but I appreciate that, Jordan. Thank you.
Well, Ian, thank you very much for taking out the time to discuss the book. I'm almost done with it. Not quite there yet, but I've enjoyed it thoroughly up to this point. I appreciate the copy, and I appreciate you calling in today. Thank you very much.
No, thank you.
Again, that's Ian Thompson, the author of The Soul of Basketball. Terrific book. I guarantee you will enjoy it. It's in stores now. Make sure you pick it up. We've got a break for just a moment. We'll come back, put the final touches on this edition of the show when we return.
Hey, let's get back to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on 750 AM KOAL.
We're back to put the final touches on this edition of the show. Travis, we don't have the Utah Jazz tonight. We get them tomorrow. Jazz needed a break, let's put it that way. Ricky Rubio injury update, he could miss up to 10 days.
It's one of those injuries that's going to hurt the Jazz in the long run. That's why you needed to close out Game 5 when you were up 25 to give yourself, A, more rest, and, B, make sure that nobody comes out injured. You extend that series one more game, and then Rubio gets hurt. So I think he's very important for the Jazz, and they're going to miss him.
I don't think they can win without Ricky Rubio.
They can't.
I really
There's
don't.
No way.
I think you and I have said this for the last couple of months. I mean, analytically looking at it, they are so much better when he is there. It's not even close.
Yeah, he is good with dictating the offense. He gets everybody in their set. So there's no way they win the series without Ricky Rubio, the way he's been playing lately.
So we'll talk some Utah Jazz basketball on the show tomorrow. Also, we're scheduled to be joined by Rob Smith, coach of the Emory Spartan baseball team. Emory right now wrapping up the regular season on the road against the Richfield Wildcats. That is going to do it for us. We will be back to do it again tomorrow, same time, same place. Thank you to Coach Troy Winter and, of course, Ian Thompson. We have Meet the Candidates coming up next here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Be safe. We are out.